Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Joe Healy, and we are here to discuss Week 14, preview Week 14, the penultimate week of the college baseball regular season. A lot is happening this week. Many conferences are coming down to the final weekend of the regular season. Several conferences are already into their tournaments, and then a few of them are not having tournaments this year, going down to week 15, but they're still very much in playing very, very significant games here in their stretch run. So we'll try and dive into all of that here. We're going to run through some scenarios, some just what teams are playing for across the major conferences this weekend, and hit on some of the other news as we get to it here. We're really down to crunch time in college baseball. So let's get to all of that here. But first, I got to let you know that the Baseball America College Podcast is presented by Rapsodo. Rapsodo has become the industry standard in player performance data. Coaches use Rapsodo data as a measuring stick for player development and evaluation. The Rapsodo National Player Database is a free service that allows you to see how you stack up against your peers and provides a pathway to get discovered by scouts. You can check out the Rapsodo National Player Database at rapsodo.com/national-database. All right, Joe, we're here. It's week 14. We're coming to you a day early because on the final weekend of the regular season, going into the conference tournaments, the most conferences start their weekend a day early to give everyone a chance to rest and travel to the conference tournament, and that means that a lot of action is starting on Thursday. So hopefully you're getting to this podcast a little early in the week ahead of those games, but still we'll get to all of the action. And if you are getting to this on Friday morning, that's your routine. Just remember that games did happen last night, and some of this might have changed a little bit. But Joe, as we get down to crunch time here, it's crazy to me that this is where we're at. Like I knew that we were coming down to it, but it's one thing to know it, and then it's another thing to look at the calendar and realize like, oh, the SEC tournament, the ACC tournament, they start in less than a week.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think this year, like the first 6 or 7 weeks, I felt like went at a a pace that felt about right, maybe even slower than I thought. But then once we kind of got past that, what I kind of call the dog days point of the season, you and I have talked about this offline, about how there's a point of the season where, you know, at first you're excited the season is starting. And then you get excited that, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in, you're like, you're learning more about these teams. Then conference play starts and you're kind of excited about conference play. But then once you've done 3 or 4 weeks of conference play, you kind of get to a point where you're like, okay, you know, we're kind of seeing these same teams every week. And we do learn some things, but also they're beating up on each other. And there does kind of set in a little bit of monotony, but then it really picks up again once we kind of get down the home stretch. And we are obviously, we are nearing the finish line of the regular season anyway. And for my money, this weekend that leads into conference tournament week, like, so all of that together actually is my favorite time of year in the sport. I love regionals, don't get me wrong, and supers and the COUS, but I love that kind of last weekend of the regular season because in part, not really necessarily because anything consequential happens, although it does, but sometimes a vast majority of the series, at least among the ranked teams, do feel somewhat inconsequential the last weekend of the season because so much has been decided. But it's really that those games roll right into conference tournaments. I mean, most conferences are doing Thursday to Saturday this weekend, but on top of that, we'll talk about this as we go, you've got a few conference tournaments that are already underway that'll be wrapping up this weekend. You've got leagues like the Pac-12 that are doing a normal weekend. So you've got those games on Sunday. You've got Big Ten games on Sunday this year because they're not doing a tournament, in addition to, you know, other smaller conferences that are doing that. And then you turn around and, like, Monday's pretty slow, but then you turn around and by Tuesday, I know the conference tournament I'll be at starts Tuesday. Big 12 starts on Tuesday this year. SEC starts on Tuesday. ACC starts on Tuesday. So, you know, you basically have that Monday to catch your breath and then you start the real sprint here. And so that this week between the last weekend of the regular season and conference tournaments is really, I think, the most, like, exhilarating, exhausting, of course, but really just exciting week of college baseball because there's no time for any sort of breather. And every team feels like they have a shot, you know, most every team anyway. And it's the beginning of the stretch run. I just think it's a lot of fun this time of year.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Just so much going on, probably a lot of scoreboard watching around the country. You know, there's just, you know, there really is, it is a great time of year. I don't know if I would say this is my favorite or, you know, next week, maybe. I love conference tournaments. I love regionals. Super regionals are fun. It starts being less fun for me in supers and in the College World Series because I love the volume of the games, you know, that you get during conference tournaments and
100%.
And regionals. Yeah, the thing when you get into supers, like, yes, every pitch is so meaningful, every game is so meaningful, but, you know, any Friday night during the regular season is like drinking out of a fire hose, really. There's just so much going on all at once. And at times it's overwhelming, but at other times it's so awesome to look at. And then, you know, you go into regionals and conference tournaments and it goes a little bit down, but there's still a very, very large amount of games that you can tune into and try and, you know, be following. You get into supers and, you know, there's 16 of them. And, you know, at least on day one, they aren't all happening at once. You know, there are 16 for one day. And then, you know, they start dropping off. And of course, in Omaha, everything is amplified even more, but there are 2 games a day. Like, I don't know. I personally like the volume play that, you know, conference tournaments, regionals, and this final week of the regular season provide. But no matter what your favorite part of the college baseball season is, we're probably coming up on it. You know, as great as opening day is, this is probably where everyone is really starting to enjoy, hit their highest level of enjoyment in the game, I would guess.
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, conference tournaments, I think, is my single favorite event because you're right. Like, it's not everybody's plan. You know, some teams have been lopped off. Some don't do conference tournaments, but most everyone is. And you know, the teams that aren't playing anymore are probably the teams you weren't paying a lot of attention to anyway. And so you do start to become more hyper aware of leagues that you really haven't paid that much attention to during conference tournament week, because it's impossible to keep up with everything. So I think that is my favorite. If you were to make me limit it down to just the one event, I mean, I think that's probably it. I'm kind of with you on, I like, don't get me wrong, I love it all. But the thing with Supers is you said it, on that Friday, you've got four games, and if three of them stink, well, that's just what you got. You know, so there definitely have been super regional years. There have been super regional years. 2016 stands out. You probably remember that well, where supers were just incredible, just bangers across the board. And then you have super regional years where you get to the end of the weekend and you're just kind of like, okay, well, you know, I guess that was that. You know, out of the eight, like seven of them were 2-0 weekends. You know, you just never know what you're going to get with supers. And every time you get an exhilarating one, you get an equal number of just kind of stinkers in terms of the totality of it.
I think I actually don't remember 16 as well as as you might think I would, because that was my first year as like the full-time college baseball beat writer for Baseball America. And so I was still just like figuring a lot of stuff out. And I remember going to Florida State that year, and that was a great super, but it also started on Saturday. And I remember, like, I think they played a night game Saturday night. It was probably like the last super regional to start. And I remember driving from, I think I flew into Tampa. I was driving from Tampa to Gainesville. And that was when UC Santa Barbara hit the walk-off against Louisville. If my memory is serving me right, or maybe that was the day that Bieber beat, I guess that was the day that Bieber beat McKay. And anyway, regardless, I just didn't watch that much of that super. First of all, it was just two games in Louisville, and then it was like during the middle of the day, and I just didn't see hardly it at all. And there's a lot of stuff like that going on, I feel like, between my travel schedule and me trying to figure out how all of this worked for the first time in my new role. And but yeah, I definitely know what you mean. There are definitely some weekends in terms of super regionals that it's like, well, yeah, we had a couple good ones, but it's a lot different when there are, you know, eight good ones and or six of the eight at least. And hopefully we can get that this year. I think that would be very enjoyable. But any super regionals, I'll take them this year for sure. And I guess before we get into this weekend, that is generally my message right now. Like, I know that this isn't easy for fans of specific programs that, you know, are looking at the way that hosts were decided this year, or, you know, if your conference tournament has been lopped in half this year, whatever, like it's not optimal. There are a lot of suboptimal things happening right now in terms of schedules and the way that this tournament selection process may play out. But just to have anything right now, like I am just still so glad about that it's really hard to get bogged down in the specifics of, you know, well, is this going to happen? Or like, if this happened, like, how come we couldn't host? Like, it just seems crazy to me that we couldn't, like, we could win the tournament and still not host. And like, yeah, okay, like, I get that as a fan base, that would be very frustrating. But the overall perspective, just to have any season, any tournament to be looking forward to right now, like, I'm still feeling very happy that we're at that point, considering where we were last year.
Yeah, it's a very healthy way to look at it. No, I think that's right. Sometimes
it's me, healthy and well-adjusted.
sometimes I have to remind myself of that. Like, it's really easy. We're in the weeds of it now. And so it's really easy to forget, you know, I don't even know the right word to describe it, but just the situation we were in last year that was just so dispiriting for any number of reasons that went far beyond baseball. But so coming from where we were at this time last year, I actually had a thought about that the other day, about what we were talking about this time last year. I'm sure we started off a podcast lamenting the fact that we were about to go into our favorite time of year. I'm sure that was exactly what we were talking about, for better or worse. So yes, given that, I mean, that is good perspective, because certainly we can sit here and gripe about some of the things we don't like about the way this year has been set up. And some of those gripes are valid, but it sure beats the alternative.
No doubt about that. And before we move on, the other thing I would say is, you know, just consider what other sports had to deal with. You know, again, soccer, both the men's and women's soccer tournaments were moved entirely to the state of North Carolina. You know, they're not supposed to be played like that. They're supposed to get campus site games, just like baseball is, if you play well enough. They didn't get them this year. You know, basketball, there were however many fans there were in Indianapolis. Everything was in Indianapolis. Like, that's not the way that was supposed to be. And, you know, so the fact that they are where they are in baseball, you know, I think is commendable in many respects. And I know this isn't going to be a popular opinion, but I think that the NCAA is doing their best. Like, it's a really tough situation. I think they're doing their best, and they've made some adjustments, yes, but they've shown that they also haven't been stuck in those adjustments. And, you know, they've continued to make adjustments as guidance, you know, from medical professionals and governments and all the rest of that has changed. And the NCAA is not doing very well in many other areas, but I think in this area, they are genuinely doing their best. So we'll see where it takes us. But when Selection Monday comes around, I hope that everyone is prepared to for what should be a really fun return to the postseason play. But we still got a lot of regular season baseball before we get to that. And that's what we're going to talk about here on this podcast. We're going to look around the major conferences, see what's on the line here in week 14, which again, for almost all of these leagues, is the final week of the regular season with conference tournaments on deck next week. So we'll get to all of that here in a second, but first, check this out. All right, Joe, like I said, we're breaking our usual format here on the Thursday/Wednesday podcast, and we're going to take a run through the major conferences. We're going to see what everyone is playing for. Simply breaking down series isn't going to get it done this week. You know, for instance, in the Big 12, you have TCU and Texas playing for the conference title, but they aren't playing each other. So if we just broke down, you know, Texas playing West Virginia, that's not really getting it done. And I don't know that anyone really wants a deep dive on both Texas versus West Virginia and TCU at Kansas State. So instead, we'll run through all the conferences, see what's on the line this weekend. And I guess since I mentioned the Big 12, we might as well start there. I think that is the league that has the most interesting situation as we go into this final weekend of the regular season. In the Big 12, TCU leads Texas by a game in the standings. They are playing at Kansas State. Texas holds the tiebreaker because they did win the series in Fort Worth. They are hosting West Virginia, but they have to find a way this weekend to better TCU by one game if they are to win their second title in three seasons. TCU looking for their first title since 2016. TCU back-to-back series losses now, first to Texas, and then last weekend to Louisiana Monroe. Texas was off last weekend for finals, should be fresh to meet West Virginia. Neither West Virginia nor K-State has a whole lot going on. One of them is not going to make the Big 12 tournament, and they're duking it out for that. But otherwise, you know, these are teams not going to the NCAA tournament unless they were to go out and shock the Big 12 with a Big 12 conference tournament title. So not the stiffest competition for, you know, TCU and Texas this weekend, but still will be very interesting to see if Texas is able to make up that one game deficit they have to TCU this weekend.
Quickly, I will say, and I don't say this casting stones, because I quite literally learned this like no more than 48 hours ago. All nine teams in the Big 12 are going to the Big 12 tournament. They are doing.
Oh, really? Why are they doing that?
That is a boy. What a question.
There's nothing on the line this weekend for K-State or West Virginia. It's seeding only.
Yeah. I mean, if you're seven, you don't have to play they're doing an 8-9 game on Tuesday evening. And then the 8-9 winner just basically slots into, I guess, what we normally think of the eight seed spot in the bracket. So it's just like a plus one. So, I mean, I guess there's motivation to try to be the seven as opposed to the 8-9. So Kansas and West Virginia are currently tied for that last two spots. So if K-State can stay, keep their nose ahead of those two, they'll stay out of that. But yes, generally speaking, not a ton on the line for either of those teams, because it is a 9-team field this year for the Big 12, which is kind of a weird thing, because I
everyone else cut spots in the Big 12 was like, yeah, this will be the year that we take everyone to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, is like, it was, they went kind of the opposite direction, which I guess, you know, if you're a conference that wasn't worried about stuff like the revenue loss, and, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like compared to the SEC, it's a different ballgame, but the Big 12 compared to the rest of college baseball doing pretty well. So I guess they feel like, you know, hey, well, you know, let's, in this weird year, like, let's, you know, try to be a little more equitable about it and just bring everybody in.
There's probably some concern about, like, well, what if some team lost two weekends and then they lost out on percentage points because of that or whatever, like, this way you don't have to worry about it. But I will say also, it wouldn't be the worst thing if they kept this going forward. For a while, other conferences have played some kind of play-in game to their conference tournament. I'd be interested to see how Big 12 coaches think about this going forward, but it would not be the worst thing.
No, I agree. And I think they'd ultimately kind of all be for it, because, I mean, let's call a spade, right? I mean, for the most part, we're talking about Kansas. We're talking about Kansas State and, you know, maybe West Virginia, although they've improved quite a bit lately and are less prone to that. You know, occasionally Texas, like I went and covered the Big 12 tournament in 2019, Texas was not there, you know, that, and I was, you know, 2013, I think Texas missed, or it was TCU, one of the two missed in 13. So it does happen, but like, let's be honest, we're talking about the same couple of teams. And I do think certainly, I think the other coaches would probably kind of be empathetic to that a little bit. And you know, cause it's one thing if everybody's getting it and it's just like, hey, you know what, don't finish last, but, there might be some of that, but I do think there is a little bit of empathy for, look, we're talking about the same couple of teams here. Like, let's just bring all nine. It's one thing if they had 11 teams in the conference, that would be kind of weird, you know, to take all 11 or something, but it's nine. Like, we're not talking a super unwieldy number. I'm kind of with you. Like, if they just kind of continued this on, because the tournament usually starts on Wednesday. A lot of their major conferences start on Tuesday as it is. So it's not like you're really, doing anything super extra there. So yeah, I'm kind of with you. Back to the original deal at hand here though. You know, this is a tough spot here too, because I perceive that, you know, it would be one thing if one of these two teams was facing a really tough challenge, and I don't want to be disrespectful to K-State or West Virginia, but two of the three bottom teams in the Big 12. And so it's hard to really kind of see where you can draw some lines here. I mean, on paper, not just because there's a spot ahead in the standings, but, you know, K-State on the road for TCU seems like a tougher path, also because we've seen K-State reach up and get Texas Tech this year, so we know there's something in there for K-State, whereas, you know, West Virginia just hasn't had those same flashes this year. So I guess
that has been really rather poor away from Morgantown.
Indeed. So, but that makes the race more interesting though, right? Because if the roles are reversed, you might just say, well, you know, TCU going on the road or playing West Virginia at home, which hasn't played well on the road, you like their chances to stay ahead of Texas having to go on the road to play Kansas State. But since it's flipped, that does make it a little more interesting. So, you know,
the most interesting scenario here is that they, you know, Texas wins the first two games against West Virginia and sets up this big deal Sunday, or in this case Saturday, showdown. And, you know, I, as I've mentioned before, TCU really struggles in game three of series. That was the one game against Monroe that they won, but they're 7-6 in weekend finales going into this weekend. You know, that would be, you know, probably the most dramatic way to go into this, and a very realistic scenario for Texas to come up and nip the Frogs for the title.
Yeah, I think it really does feel like a thing that's going to play out on the last day, just because you can kind of see this, you know, even if they win, each team wins the first two games of their series, if that flips and Texas sweeps and TCU loses on that in the finale, Texas with the tiebreaker obviously is in good shape there. So it really does kind of feel like this is going to come down to the last day, because it would, I mean, it would be quite the surprise if, although maybe not, given that they just lost that series to ULM, but it would be a little bit of a surprise if Texas grabs the first two, TCU loses the last two, and then that's kind of all she wrote there, or even the opposite, where TCU goes out, wins the first two, Texas loses them, and it's over that way. It does feel like it's coming down to Saturday, which is about all you can ask for in this situation. I guess we could get greedy and ask they would be playing each other. I guess that would be the only thing that would be better, but it does feel like it's going to come down to the last day.
Yeah, and the Big 12 has a habit of doing that, so not out of character at all for this conference. There's not a whole lot else on the line besides, besides the league title. Tech is firmly hosting. They're pretty firmly the third team in the standings as well, unless they were to get swept this weekend. And I guess even then, because they hold the tiebreaker over Oklahoma State, who is done. They're playing non-conference this weekend. But I would also direct your attention to Baylor and Oklahoma. Baylor is at this point comfortably in the NCAA tournament field, RPI 31, 10 and 11 in the Big 12, but that's not a huge deal. But they lost last weekend to Oklahoma State. If they lost this weekend, you're looking at 11 and 13. The RPI falls a little bit. Like, you're talking about a team that's falling back to the bubble. The bubble's very forgiving this year. It probably wouldn't be that big of a deal for Baylor. They have, a series win at Texas Tech, for instance. Like, they have some nice top line stuff, but it would be ideal for them to win this weekend and then not have to worry about it. But if Oklahoma got them, and this is in Waco as well, if Oklahoma went to Waco, won a series, they would improbably be like crawling back to the bubble. They're 9-12 in the Big 12 going into this, but if they won the series, finishing 11-13 in the Big 12, again, not a huge problem this year. Like, not great. Like, certainly we're talking about one of the last teams in the field were they to pull it off. But at 11-13, the RPI is 66 right now. It would go up. They're only 25-25 overall, but again, 2-1. Like, now you have a winning record going to Oklahoma City, and maybe you play well in the Big 12 tournament. Like, it would at least make things interesting for the Sooners in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the bubble is forgiving too. I mean, the thing about it is the bubble is a, as you know, and I'm not saying this for your benefit, this listener benefit, but the bubble is a living, breathing organism. And, the bubble is forgiving right until it's not. And in 2019, the bubble didn't move much. You know, in 2019, we didn't have a lot of wonkiness, but I wrote in Three Strikes this week, which went up right before we started recording. So you can check it out there, kind of a primer for the stolen bids. So if you're a team on the bubble, there are certain conferences around the country that you're going to want to pay attention to in their conference tournaments, because what could happen, just to give you one example, Liberty, comfortable at-large team, as it stands right now. Well, Florida Gulf Coast wins the A-Sun. Well, Liberty's going to get in anyway. So that became a two-bid conference instead of a one-bid conference. Northeastern in the Colonial, that's another example. So there are these examples around the country of conferences that have one good or maybe two quality at-large teams and nobody else. And if someone from that nobody else wins the conference tournament, it shrinks the bubble. And so, I say that to say, in a situation like Baylor, you lose the series, you put yourself in some peril, and you might, in a soft bubble situation, get in. But suddenly, if you're the last team, if you're one of the last couple teams in, and then the bubble gets shrinks by four, well, now you're on the wrong side of the fence. And so things can change. Things are pretty fluid and can change pretty quickly when we start to get down to brass tacks and conference tournaments, because we just never know how it's going to go. Some years the bubble really shrinks up and you look up and suddenly you're leaving teams out you don't want to leave out. And then some years it's the opposite, where some teams are getting in that were surprised or even in the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not going to, like, that shouldn't be what your attention is in the Big 12 this weekend, but it's something to keep an eye on. And if you are a Baylor or Oklahoma fan, obviously it's top line stuff, because that it is coming down to it for those teams this weekend. All right, Joe, let's move on. Let's head over to the SEC. Where I actually had intended to start this thing, but the Big 12 is legitimately probably the most interesting place, because the title race is so interesting. In the SEC, the title is on the line this weekend as well. Although the Big 12 makes a bigger deal out of their regular season title than most other conferences. I assume that's because they play true round robin. Whereas, you know, these other conferences with divisions or are that are just larger, you know, probably place less emphasis on a regular season title. But Arkansas has a chance to win its first SEC regular season title since, Joe, do you have any idea how long it's been?
I don't, but I'll guess 2004.
That is dead right. You might have read that in Off the Bat. That might have been buried in your memory from that or something.
That perhaps might be the case. But I do just know that is more than anything else. I do just know that being like a year that gets thrown around a lot with like fun facts about Arkansas. So I mean, that's probably where it's more than anything else. Why?
I mean, that's like DVH's. I don't think it's his first team.
It's their breakthrough
second team.
Yeah.
And it's a huge breakthrough spot for them. And I am surprised they haven't won a regular season title since then. You know, considering everything that Arkansas has accomplished under Dave Van Horn, they've gone more than 15 years now without an SEC title. It definitely speaks to the strength of the conference and, you know, a whole number of other things, but they have a chance this weekend. They should in fact win their first SEC title since then. Magic number is 2. So they don't need any help. They're 19-8, Tennessee's 18-9. Arkansas obviously owns a tiebreaker over the Vols, and Vanderbilt 17-9. There is no tiebreaker. I mean, there is ultimately a tiebreaker there, but considering that Vanderbilt will not play the same number of games as everyone else but Alabama, since they have that game rained out, no tiebreaker needed, but it will be pretty hard since they only have 17 wins right now. It'd be hard for Vanderbilt to sneak up and pluck that title away. So this is probably going to be Arkansas's, but they have a difficult opponent this weekend. They're playing Florida, and they're doing this at home, which is a rarity in these situations this year for Arkansas. They're used to going down the road for these huge series, but instead they will this time get their top 10 opponent at home. For the Gators, this weekend is meaningful to an extent. They were announced as a on that preliminary host list. They're projected as a host right now. They're probably fine as a host, regardless of what happens over the next 2 weeks at 17-10 in the SEC. But there are some scenarios. You know, were they to lose out, and that's taking 4 losses probably, because they're not going to have probably they wouldn't have a bye in the SEC tournament if they were swept this weekend, they would really be flirting with not hosting. I feel like they probably still would host, but it would definitely not be a secure situation to be in, I don't think. So if they can just take a game off of Arkansas this weekend, I think all of that goes away. They would then have 18 SEC wins at least, and would have to feel really strong about hosting. So that's what's on the line for Florida this weekend. A lot more on the line for the Hogs as they try and clean up their or finish up their SEC title.
Yeah, I kind of marvel. So a couple things here that are maybe not exactly where you would think my brain would be, but the thing about Arkansas with me is they've just been so consistent and so steady week after week. I kind of marveled at the fact that in spite of that, they've still lost 8 games in the SEC. I also would marvel at the fact that they hadn't locked up the SEC title by now, just given how metronomic they've been in their consistency in winning series, that it has felt so inevitable for so long. And now, I mean, it really isn't even inevitable. Like, things could change that and make that not so. I like their chances to do so, especially being at home. But it's amazing to me that the SEC is just this good to where a team can be that good and not have it locked up before the first or the final weekend of the regular season. So interesting series there with Arkansas and Florida. I think that's going to be one of the headliners. You know, I think Tennessee, which, you know, obviously in this mix here, that's a fascinating series on the road against South Carolina, just because, you know, which way does it go for Tennessee? Are they kind of deflated after their second consecutive, not consecutive, but they had this kind of same situation against Vanderbilt earlier this year. They come close, but can't quite get there. Does it kind of go in a negative direction? Does it go in a positive direction? Meanwhile, South Carolina seems to be playing better, has maybe figured some things out on the mound. They moved Brett Carey to the rotation.
All he did was throw a shutout.
Arkansas started. Right. That's all. Wes Clark is swinging the bat better now. The offense in general is performing a little bit better now, but we all know that Clark kind of stirs that drink there. So that series feels very tricky to me, and it's hard to pick against Tennessee because they too have been, you know, they've won every series except Vanderbilt and Arkansas. There's a lot to be said for that, but that does feel like a real sticky situation on the road there, coming off of an emotionally taxing series for Tennessee.
It's also a situation where, you know, yes, Tennessee is still alive for the SEC title, but they, you know, they'll be aware of how hard it's going to be, you know, that they need help from the Gators of all teams to win the title. South Carolina, meanwhile, has a lot to play for. They were announced as a potential host as well. They responded to that news better than anyone, except for maybe Ole Miss, last weekend. They swept Kentucky. So they're now 15-12 in the SEC. It's a light resume right now. But if you were to add in a series win against Tennessee, finishing with 17 SEC wins, they also, of course, have a sweep of Florida. It starts to be a really good case. And, you know, were that to happen, you know, where South Carolina wins this weekend, you know, they and Florida are going to finish back to back in the standings of the SEC East. They own, you know, not just a series win against the Gators, they own a sweep against the Gators. They have a better RPI than the Gators. Like, that's when it really starts to get interesting for who hosts between those two schools, or can they both host? And so that's on the line this weekend for South Carolina, you know, the chance to play a home regional, and they really need it. I don't think they can host without winning this weekend. I don't think 16-14 in the SEC would get it done. Although, you know, again, I talk about this, but if they were to go on the run in Hoover, which is traditionally a house of horrors for the Gamecocks, even the best Gamecocks teams didn't play well in the SEC tournament. But were they to go on a run in Hoover, you know, everything changes. But it would be simplest if they were to just, you know, go out and beat Tennessee at home this weekend. Easier said than done, but that's what's on the line for the Gamecocks. Further down, Joe, we've got Alabama, LSU, Georgia, all with either 11 or 12 SEC wins. One of these teams probably makes regionals, maybe two of them, but probably not all three. They have challenging final weekends. Georgia 12-15 in the SEC, hosting Ole Miss. Alabama 12-14 hosting Mississippi State. LSU 11-16 going to A&M. A&M is itself playing for a spot in the SEC tournament. That's not wrapped up yet. They still could lose that. All of them challenging in their own ways. LSU should be feeling good about themselves after winning a series against Alabama, except that they just lost on Tuesday against Northwestern State. And you know, who knows what that did to anyone mentally in Baton Rouge. But Joe, what do you think about that collection of teams here that are fighting for regionals bids?
Well, it's a mess because I think you can, I mean, There's reason to like all these teams, and then there's just the counterbalance of the reasons not to feel confident in them. And I guess that's how you just describe teams that are inconsistent and mediocre. Like, I guess
that's a bubble team for you.
Yeah, that's a bubble team.
A power conference bubble team, anyway.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, but I think this year has kind of exacerbated some of these issues. We were talking about this the other day. Like, it just feels like the SEC is probably the biggest example, but I feel like there's more to it this year where it seems like I don't think we often have three SEC bubble teams like this that are all kind of in the same little orbit here.
I'd have to really look back. I think you're right, though.
Yeah, it just feels very abnormal to have that. You know, there's usually like a very clear top tier, very clear bottom tier, and then we've got like maybe one or two that are floating around the middle a little bit. You know, Florida, Missouri in 2019, for example. So this does feel a little bit abnormal. And the thing about it is LSU has the easiest series, although it is on the road, but they're the furthest away. You know, Georgia is probably the team that I felt the best about all year.
No, you say they're the furthest away because they're 11-16. So right. They absolutely have to win the series to even get to 13, but they have the best RPI of the group. Mm. And it's not close.
Although it is a little closer after, you know, again, losing to Northwestern State.
Yeah. Yeah. You're saying that's not ideal. Yeah. I guess I just like with the RPI, like I just, maybe this is just inertia and not being used to having to pay attention to the RPI, but I just kind of always assume the RPI is fine, you know, in the SEC. And most of the time it is, but I guess you're right.
There's a reason why we're not talking about Kentucky, which is also 11-16, but they play at Vanderbilt. So it's all there ahead of them. You know, yeah. Just go beat Vanderbilt, except that their RPI is 65 and that's not going to get it done.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
And Georgia is 42. And that is enough that like, that is bad enough that they're not going to get any benefit of the doubt, I don't think. Whereas LSU and Alabama, especially Alabama with a series win this weekend, will be good enough to get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I feel. Yeah, yeah. What a strange little situation we have here. I feel the most comfortable with Georgia because Georgia's just been so competitive this year in series that you wouldn't think they should be, but yet, you know, the hits just kind of keep on coming with, you know, injuries and most recently Ryan Webb and Jonathan Cannon maybe hasn't quite been the guy that they were hoped he was going to be, and they've had, you know, three other relievers who haven't pitched all year, and they've just kind of kept on going. But you just wonder if it's all too much. And a series against Ole Miss, another team that's really motivated to make sure they host. And it would be somewhat on brand for Ole Miss this year to lose that series and to not just make it easy on themselves. But I just don't know that that's a great matchup. And I feel the same about Alabama, just because I'm actually still kind of surprised Alabama's in this mix. It feels like, you know, I start to kind of write them off, and then I look back one week later and they're still there. So I think I like Ole Miss, or not Ole Miss, I'm sorry. I think I like LSU most out of this group, just because they are the furthest away in terms of wins, but you're right about the RPI. They are going to get some benefit of the doubt there. It's also a team that you talk about teams that don't play well in Hoover. LSU does. They tend to play pretty well there, and whether or not you believe there's actually something to that or not, there is, you know, that the history there, you know. So if I'm putting money on one of these teams, it's probably LSU, just because they've got the easiest path in terms of the opponent, and they've still got Hoover in front of them, which I think that program in particular sees as, you know, a place they're comfortable and a place where they can make some hay, even if it's just a very different team than a lot of them that have had success there. It's a fairly young team, but if you believe there's something to that, then you have to like their chances.
I mean, they're definitely playing the best down the stretch right now. So that's also a thing that's going for them. I am highly intrigued by Alabama this weekend. They go home. That's a comfortable place for them, obviously. Most teams play better at home. They're one of them. They get Mississippi State, which frankly has very little to play for at this point. You're talking about seeding in the SEC tournament, I guess, and like the potential for a bye. I don't know how much you're going to get up for that. They're probably locked into a top eight. The thing about that, though, with them being totally out on the beach this weekend, first of all, there is no beach in Tuscaloosa, but the other problem is that they just got last weekend by Mizzou. So which way does that go? Is that a wake-up call that like something is actually like, or an alarm that something is wrong with Mississippi State right now? The last place Mizzou was able to go into Starkville and win? Or was it a wake-up call to the Bulldogs that, oh, we actually can't quit playing hard yet? Like, we have to play through the finish line if we're going to do what we want to do. Like, so I'm very intrigued to see where Mississippi State goes and then how Alabama adjusts to that and what they have this weekend. I mean, we've liked this Alabama team all year long. There's a reason why they're a preseason 25 for us. Things haven't quite gone their way either. A lot of injuries, starting with Connor Prelip, their ace. And that's why they haven't been the team that we thought they would be. But, you know, they just keep winning games. Like you said, like anytime you're ready to write them off, they do something that's like, well, okay, there's definitely still in this. And that's where they're at going into a very intriguing final week of the regular season.
You're right, there's no beach in Tuscaloosa, but how fast do you think there'd be a beach in Tuscaloosa if Nick Saban said he wanted one for recruiting purposes? They would figure that out.
I mean, he has a lake house, right? And like he talks about that lake house all the time. How far is that lake house from? I mean, like there's that it's got to be a nice beach at the lake, right?
You'd think, although I'm
strictly, where are you at on ocean beaches versus lake beaches?
A big ocean beaches guy. Lakes are not beaches. That's my official stance on that. Thank you. here's the thing. Like I do enjoy a good lake. My parents have retired and live on a lake now. So like I'm clearly pro lake in general, but I just don't think it's a beach. Like, you know, it's not sandy, soft sand. They're usually rocky. The water's cooler, especially when you're talking, I guess, in the South, they're maybe not the same way, but you know, as well as I do, Midwestern lakes are pretty cool, even in the summer, you know, temperature wise. So I would say there are probably beaches at lakes that are beaches by the letter of the law, but not by the spirit of the law, if that makes sense. Like,
I think it does. Yeah. I mean, you're not getting the ocean breeze. That's a big part of the beach experience, right?
For sure.
Like, you know, plenty of other things like that. Yes. You cannot replicate on a lake, no matter whether we're talking about a Great Lake or, you know, just a lake in Alabama.
Yeah, like I just think, you know, it's those might technically be beaches, but like, come on, they're not really beaches. Let's be real here.
All right, let's go somewhere with some actual beachfront property, Joe. Let's head out west to the Pac-12. Although nowhere are we going that has beachfront property, because we're going to Oregon, and the heart of, or the meat of the Pac-12 race this week is it's all happening in Oregon, as the Ducks host Stanford in Eugene. No beach there. Spent a lot of time in my youth in Eugene. My grandparents retired there. But you can be at the Oregon beach, not too long from Eugene. And then in Corvallis, which is a little closer to the beach, but definitely not beachfront either. Oregon State hosts Arizona. Arizona and Oregon have created a little bit of separation from Stanford. They're 1-2 in the conference. Stanford is 3. I don't think the Cardinal are out of it, but it does require them to win this weekend in Oregon, which is no easy task. And Stanford has played less games because they missed a weekend due to COVID. That confuses my ability to really make sense of exact scenarios for how they win the conference, but they're still alive. They just have a really tough road ahead. Arizona trying to win their first Pac-12 title since 2012. They will be done with their Pac-12 season this weekend. They have the Pac-12 bye in week 15. They're playing Dixie State. They cannot win the title though this weekend. They are too close to the Chasers, to Oregon and to Stanford. So they're going to be scoreboard watching no matter what, but they're going to try and put their best, they're trying to go into the clubhouse with as big of a lead as possible. Oregon facing a really difficult Stanford team, although it is a Stanford team that just lost 2 games last weekend at Cal. So, you know, the Ducks are probably feeling good about their chances this weekend, but that is a highly intriguing series. And I, you know, what's happening in Corvallis is important as well. I mean, not only is it significant for Arizona's title chances, Oregon State, if you think this really matters to a team, you know, they're trying to stay on the 2 line in terms of the NCAA tournament. And they're definitely playing for Pac-12 standing. Oregon State, UCLA, and Arizona State all stacked up right now, off of those, right behind those top 3 teams in the conference.
Yeah, it's that you mentioned Stanford being a little bit short of games, and that could very well end up mattering here, just because that series was against Washington, and Washington has 3 Pac-12 wins. So Stanford, like, charitably would be 15-9, which would be 2 games back of Oregon in second place versus the 2.5. So it's not a huge difference, but it is something there. You know, more likely they're 16-8, honestly, just because Washington has struggled that much this season. Washington got 3 Pac-12 wins, like, you know, kind of in the early-ish part of Pac-12 play, with 2 against UCLA, 1 against Arizona State, and they've just been on a horrific skid lately in that conference.
9 straight losses right now.
Yeah, it's just, but they get Utah this weekend. Utah and Washington this weekend, 2 teams that could really use some Pac-12 wins, because they are.
Is that on Pac-12 Network, or can I catch that on Pac-12 Network Plus?
Yeah, you'll probably be able to stream that one. That's probably a stream this weekend, I would guess. But they have really, in a not great way, separated themselves at the bottom of the conference there. So not a great year for either of those programs. So, but Stanford.
You know, remember 5 years ago when they played for the Pac-12 title? What a
Oh my goodness.
What a crazy thing. I mean, like, UW has been really good since then. Like, they went to Omaha and everything, but like, if you think back to 2016, when that happened, like, what a world.
Yeah, that was a different world we were living in. No kidding. My goodness. So those games might matter for Stanford in the end. I mean, that could end up being the difference, which is would be tough. I mean, that's COVID though. I mean, that's we knew that was the risk going into this season. I like Arizona's chances of making enough hay here this weekend. You know, I like the matchup with Oregon State fairly well for them, even on the road. It's not as offensive an environment, obviously, as Tucson is, but that's an offense that can really get it done anywhere. And so I do kind of like their ability to continue to put up runs, especially against this this Oregon State pitching staff. You know, and then the Oregon State offense, I just don't know how well they can keep up there. It's an Oregon State team that has done a really good job, you know, keeping its head above water. They've been a solid at-large team all season long. They've really never fallen too far down. They were kind of on the periphery of the host race at one point, but never quite, you know, cemented that. I think it's a good team, but I think it's a team Arizona probably handles. And then, you know, Oregon, not only do they have Stanford this weekend, which is no guarantee there, then they finish with Cal. And, you know, Cal is just frisky enough to give you some trouble. And so even if they go 4-2 in those games, like I think Arizona is going to be able to stretch enough of a lead there where I kind of like their chances to hold on here. But I got to give Oregon a lot of credit. I have to admit, Oregon's one of those teams where I write these teams up every week at the end of the weekend in our top 25 capsules. So I have to kind of take a big picture look at those teams. And like broad strokes, I kind of understand what's happening. But Oregon's just one of those teams where, you know, Oregon State has been this kind of team, frankly, in the past. You know, if you take away like a standout player like an Adley Rutschman, where the record just doesn't necessarily match with the stats. And that's one for Oregon for me, where they've got some guys who are having really nice years, but it's a lot of just kind of getting the job done in unglamorous ways. You know, we talked early about the increased physicality of their offense, and like that might be true, but certainly they're not hitting like they were early this season when Kenyon Jovan looked like he was going to be the best power bat in the country. Now he's merely just one of, and the pitching staff has been good, but you know, early in the season it looked like, you know, Ahlstrom and Kafka were going to be, you know, maybe Pac-12 pitcher of the year type guys, and they haven't quite been that. They've still been very good. And yeah,
I mean, Oregon, you say that, but there is no pitcher of the year in the Pac-12. Like they might be those guys. Like the Pac-12 is not blessed with like amazing seasons from individual pitchers right now.
Yeah, fair enough. And I look at it now and like the numbers are actually better.
Yeah, I would say Oregon is Ahlstrom and Kafka at the front of the rotation. Colby Summers as a closer. That is in the West. I would comfortably say out West, that is the best 1-2 plus reliever situation of any team. And that's a big part of why Oregon is where they are. They have enough offense. Like you're right. It has slowed. Jovan has slowed since he hit like a billion home runs at Santa Barbara that one weekend. And then followed it up with another really good weekend immediately after. But you know, he, Matthews, Zavala, all made, like it makes for a pretty good offensive core. I think I'm forgetting a guy in there, and you know, they just they do a good job overall. They run deeper than they typically have, and they have enough star power. And you know, we've seen this from Mark Wazikowski before, that you know, there can be a pretty quick improvement. He did this at Purdue in year two, taking the Boilermakers to the NCAA tournament. And yeah, so this is year two at Oregon, and you're just seeing they had good players to begin with. Like none of these players is, you know, pretty much everyone I've talked about, he inherited, and you know, they're older and they just really know what they're doing out there. And I mean, I moved them into my 8 for Omaha this week. I think that they're going to be really tough to handle in the NCAA tournament because of that 1-2. And then, you know, Summers at the back end of the bullpen and just the age in their lineup. I think that they're going to, you know, they're going to be at home at least for one weekend. And then even if they have to travel for the second weekend, I like what they're bringing to the table. But I am with you. I still think Arizona gets this done. I think having the 2-game advantage in the win column is significant. Oregon State is going to be feisty this weekend. This is a, you know, you want, like under the radar storylines, like you got one here because Nate Yeske is Arizona's pitching coach. He, of course, spent a really long time in Corvallis in that job, got passed over for the head coaching job. When they hired Mitch Canham, I think both sides will be motivated. Daniel Susak, Arizona's great freshman catcher, was at one point committed to Oregon State, where his brother played. There's plenty of cross-pollination here. And I think both teams will be motivated to come out and do something beyond like the actual on-field stuff. And Oregon State, their RPI 21 right now, they close very difficult. They face Arizona and then go to Stanford on the final weekend. If they were to win those two series, you know, we've talked about who could be traveling ones. This is a potential traveling one. And the place they would travel to, I guess, would be Spokane. If it were to happen, they would definitely earn it. If it did, I don't think it's going to happen, but it is all in front of the Beavers still, despite the fact that they've been a little lackluster over the last few weekends.
One quick thing on Arizona too. We've talked about how, you know, we talk a lot about their offense, and I'll just throw my name out there. I've kind of made jokes about like, they're just going to win games 9-8 and they're okay with that. And I think that's still true, but it does feel like, speaking of Nate Yeske, they have started to round into form on the mound a little bit. Like, it used to kind of be like Chase Silseth would throw on Friday and he would give you 6 or 7, but he'd probably give up 3 or 4. And then kind of after that, you're piecing it together. But, you know, Garrett Irvin threw a complete game last weekend. His numbers have been improving as the year has gone on. Like, Silseth is still part of the mix there, but a few guys have stepped up in the bullpen. Gil Luna had a good weekend. Preston Price has had some good outings.
They legitimately like their bullpen right now.
Yeah, like it's not like it's never going to be a shutdown pitching staff. It's not that. But I do think they like what they've got. I think that's a great way to put it. I think they like what they've got there, and it's certainly in a lot better shape than it was when we looked at this like 6 or 8 weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And Silseth has improved a lot. I think he's a lot closer to the pitcher that they thought he could be. And I know you were really high on him coming into the year, and then he looked terrible in that Texas tournament. I don't remember if that was Round Rock or Frisco. And I got kind of down on him, but he's bounced back in a really nice way. And Garrett Irvin is back doing his thing. And it's going to be an offensive based team, but I think that they can pitch pretty well. That shouldn't be a surprise considering, you know, who is their pitching coach right now. And they do have several talented arms on the pitching staff. And one last thing on this series, I think it's significant for both Stanford and Arizona, two teams we've talked about being very good offensively this season, going to two places that traditionally are better for pitchers in Eugene and Corvallis, doing so in May and in late May at that, or mid-May, whatever we are now, is a lot different than doing it in like early April. So, you know, that's not to say either one of these places suddenly turns into Coors Field, but, you know, the weather is going to be better. It's not going to be like 40 and raining. And I think that is significant for two teams that want to bash the ball a little bit, going up north this weekend. All right, Joe, let's go to the ACC. This one's pretty quick because, as we talked about on Monday, the ACC really wrapped up a whole bunch of stuff last weekend, including Notre Dame having already won the conference. So that is not to play for. There's really no one's playing for a whole lot of anything except for some teams that are sitting on the bubble. And frankly, they're probably going to sit on the bubble going into the ACC tournament even. There are some teams that I suppose could really play their way out of it this weekend, but there's because there are only two teams on the potential host site list, you know, there's not a whole lot going on there. Notre Dame's locked into hosting. Pitt, as I've mentioned, is probably locked into not hosting unless they are hosting as a 2 seed. And if they want to do that, if they want to have any hope of hosting as a 1 seed, they absolutely must sweep Wake Forest this weekend. But I think the most significant series this weekend is Miami and Louisville. I'm not even sure how much is on the line here. There's a path, I suppose, for Miami to become a traveling 1 seed that involves them playing extraordinarily well over the final 2 weeks. Louisville, I feel like, is not super bubbly right now because when you compare them to other ACC bubble teams, the only thing Louisville doesn't have going for it is its RPI. You know, if you look at it versus Clemson or North Carolina, even, you know, two teams that beat Louisville. Like, they, Louisville still has a lot going for it that those other teams don't. And yeah, so we'll see. But Louisville needs to stop this slide. They've been in a funk. They need to come home. They need to do something against Miami. They can then feel better about their regional chances and just generally be playing better going into the postseason. That's one to watch. Duke and Clemson is intriguing from a bubble standpoint. Clemson is right there on the bubble. I had them as the last team in. They could very easily have been the first team out. They are dead there right now. And Duke is off the bubble right now, but with the series win at Clemson, maybe they work their way to the bubble going into the ACC tournament. And they are coming off of a sweep of Virginia Tech, so the Blue Devils are playing well. Speaking of Virginia Tech, they have played themselves to the wrong side of the bubble recently, and now they face Notre Dame at home. They need to do something this weekend in Blacksburg. And then North Carolina is at Georgia Tech. I feel like the Tar Heels are okay coming off of that sweep of Louisville. If they win one game this weekend, they would finish 500 in the ACC and probably be absolutely fine. But if they were to get swept, maybe something happens there. So I don't know if any of that's particularly compelling to you, Joe, but what do you got in the ACC?
Yeah, I think all of the above, frankly. I mean, you know, the other one I would throw out there, I don't think it means a lot, but, you know, Florida State's going to NC State. And like, suddenly that's like a really tasty series within the ACC.
That's true. It is for absolutely nothing but ACC tournament seeding. But it is, those are two of the best teams in the ACC.
Yeah, both teams playing pretty well right now. So, and, you know, a Florida State team that I think I like as much as anybody not called Notre Dame in terms of postseason prospects because of the way that team is built. So that, you know, I'll go out there for at least some of that series this weekend. So I'm kind of excited to see that because I haven't seen Florida State with my own eyes this year. And I haven't seen NC State with my own eyes really since they started making this push in earnest. So that should be a lot of fun. But I'm with you on a lot of this stuff. I mean, Louisville, it's less about what the wins mean. And it's just more about, can you start feeling a little bit better about yourself? Honestly, I mean, they just need some feel good in terms of the way they're playing, because I mean, as it is right now, they're just in such a tough spot. And if, you know, if this weekend doesn't go well, suddenly you're banking on an ACC tournament. And oh, by the way, Louisville is one of those teams that doesn't really typically do much in the ACC tournament. And a lot of years, they don't have much to need to do in the ACC tournaments. This would be a little bit new for them in terms of wanting to feel good about what they do there. So that would be an interesting wrinkle there. And on the flip side of it, Miami's such a weird team. We talked about this in the recap podcast on Monday. It's kind of amazing how close Miami really, despite all the ups and downs and the mediocrity, and it still feels like, you know, especially on offense where, you know, just name a big name player on their offense that we expected to have a big year, and that person has probably underperformed a little bit. So despite all of that, they're probably just a couple wins away from having been named as one of the 20 potential hosts. So it's kind of amazing how close they ended up coming despite all that. It would also be like the, you know, Duke and Clemson. It would be a very ACC thing if, you know, Duke was one of the teams that we had kind of left for dead, and, you know, BC and Wake Forest have stayed there. They haven't been able to get up off the mat, but, you know, here.
And are officially dead. They're out. They're not going to Charlotte for the ACC tournament.
Yes. Duke, meanwhile, like, not only has kind of clawed their way back in, but also has one of the better RPIs in the conference somehow, among the bubble teams anyway. So they're looking pretty decent there. And I think the other thing that's such a variable here is, we've talked about this before, is we have a rubric for how this stuff typically works. Like, they play 30 games and we know what records get you in typically and which ones don't. Well, with 36, we don't really know what that number is. And so is it just by percentage the same thing as it usually is, whatever the equivalent of 14 and 16 is, or are they willing to, you know, just count the extra wins as opposed to hurting you for the extra, dinging you for the extra losses? So we'll have to see. And I think that series there could be an interesting test case for that, obviously understanding that they still have the ACC tournament. But if one of these teams goes, 15 and 18 in, is my math right there?
It's not, but it doesn't matter anyway, because Duke missed three games because NC State had COVID issues.
That's the problem. So, yeah. Okay. So if Clemson goes,
they could be 15 and 18. If that happens and Duke wins, then Clemson finishes at 17 and 19.
Right. Right.
And Clemson has a deliciously fascinating resume. They are one game above 500 overall right now. Like, technically this year, like, they changed the rule and you don't have to be above 500 to be an at-large team. But like, is that actually going to, like, they changed that at a time when it was like, well, what are schedules going to look like and how many games is anyone going to play? I mean, the ACC playing 50 games, I don't know how much, you know, I mean, yeah, they took away half a dozen of their non-conference games and you could spot Clemson some wins in those games, but they played so close to a normal schedule. I just don't think there's going to be a whole lot of quarter given for that for, but we'll see. I mean, it would be a really fascinating test case if Duke were to win the series.
Yeah. It's also just a reminder of how nice it'll be. I assume we've not gotten this far, nor should we have at this point, but I assume we're going back to regular schedules next year for the most part. I think there will be some remnants around the country of what they've done here if certain conferences like the way things worked. But for like the ACC,
which is something we want to follow up on in the summer. So indeed. Look for that down the road indeed. For us.
but I have to assume in the major conferences, they're going to go back to some semblance of normal. And man, if they go back to a 30-game schedule, I will be so thankful that we no longer have to like worry, because my brain just gets so confused every week trying to like look at these records and figuring out what the equivalent is. And all that stuff. It'll be just nice that we at least in theory, will not have to worry about that next year.
I would strongly guess the ACC goes back to 10 conference weekends of 3 games.
Yeah, I mean, this has just been like, it just can't be this again. You know, like it is. You could make a really strong argument. It's just been maybe that the ACC was always going to be aggressively mediocre this year. But I do think like this is an off season topic. I'm veering off here, but like it, you know, it does feel like it has hurt the league.
Yeah, I am definitely diving into this. So because I'm talking about this now on the podcast, nobody else can do this. Those are the rules.
That's right. That's how that stuff works.
It is definitely on my to-do list sometime, like starting in mid-June. Like, okay, ACC, like let's do an autopsy here. Because yeah, this is they went with what turned out to be it didn't when they announced like what they were doing, it did not seem like it was going to be a radical change to their schedule. It seemed like a sensible thing that, you know, if anything, was closer to normal than what many expected. It turned out to be a radical schedule change compared to what other conferences did. And it has undoubtedly had a massive impact on how their season has unfolded. So there are thoughts out there, and I'm gonna try and track them down. But Duke is a very interesting team. They're gonna have to earn it this weekend in Clemson. Clemson plays really well at home, but if they do it, it's gonna get really interesting. And the other thing to remember with these ACC teams is that they play pools in the ACC tournaments. So, you know, 1-1 is on the table for these teams. In Charlotte, it doesn't have to be a case where you're taking two losses or where it's one and out or whatever. So it's a lot of fascinating ACC baseball ahead that may or may not mean a whole lot for anything more than the bubble purpose, but it is a lot of these teams are grouped right around the bubble right now. All right. I mentioned radical schedule changes. Let's head up to the Big Ten here. A lot going on there this weekend. You've got 4 teams in the Big Ten within 2 games of each other going into the final 2 weeks. They are not having a Big Ten tournament. So there's this week and then there is next week. You got Nebraska at the top, Indiana, Michigan, Maryland, all right there with them. And this weekend, Nebraska, Indiana, and Ohio State go to play a pod in Bloomington. It's that's a 4-team or a 4-game deal for those three teams. And then Maryland goes to Michigan. That's a traditional 3-game series. Nothing's going to be decided this weekend. It's definitely going to come down to the final weekend. But you do have a chance here to, you know, get yourself a little bit of separation going into the final weekend potentially. Maryland needs something this weekend to kind of stay in the hunt. They run the risk of falling off the title chase here if they were to lose in Ann Arbor. So a lot can happen here, Joe. The only other like truly relevant Big Ten team right now is Iowa. They're a couple games further back in the standings, but they just play a much easier closing schedule. So they'll probably end up closer to the leaders. But they're at Northwestern this weekend. So not a whole lot going on there, but that pod in Bloomington is very intriguing here.
Yeah, I don't. Let's just go ahead and write it down for like all the teams just split their games, because like that's probably what we're talking about here. I mean, let's be honest. Like this league has just been that way. We've cycled through Big Ten teams in the top 25. We've ranked all three of those teams. You know, the three top teams: Nebraska, Michigan, Indiana. Throughout the season, and we kind of keep flip flopping on it because we just can't be. You know, it's hard to be convinced that anyone else is deserving because we don't know what to make of a Big Ten this year. And then you add Ohio State into it, which has been a little bit of a Jekyll and Hyde story this year. They're just talented enough to get you, but they're also just inconsistent enough. And their offense is sometimes struggles enough to where they just kind of can't keep the ball rolling for any length of time. So that particular team is a problem for in this mix, because they're just good enough to get you. And, you know, I guess the thing about Ohio State, if we're really going to dream on it though, like, Ohio State goes.
Yeah, I mean, they're 5.5 back of the leaders, 19-16. It's there for them. It's all there in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly wouldn't bet on it, but like, it's not like they're
the last time they played Indiana, they swept a 4-game series. So,
yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. I'm with you on Michigan, Maryland. Maryland needs something here. I mean, not just for the title race and wanting to be a part of that, but because Iowa finishes with such a soft finish now,
and Iowa is like 3-1 this season against Maryland.
Yeah, certainly. So if you know, it's feeling like the cleavage in the Big Ten is going to be between 4 and 5 in terms of NCAA tournament. I guess they could get 5 if things break right, but if there's going to be a break before that, it's going to be between 4 and 5. It feels like. And so if Maryland falls behind Iowa, Iowa's got a soft schedule to finish. Iowa owns the head-to-head, and then, oh, by the way, like, we've talked about how little RPI matters, but, you know, shout out Evan Bland to the Omaha World Herald. He did a story, I guess, probably a few weeks ago now, where he interviewed the committee chairman, Jeff Altier from Stetson. And, you know, he asked him about RPI, and they are not willing to say they're not going to use RPI when it comes to Big Ten. So I don't know if that means they're going to just stack the Big Ten's RPIs together. But I say all that to say, Iowa right now has the number 2 RPI in the conference behind Nebraska. Now
it's only going to back up though. All the Big Ten RPIs are going to get tight because they all play theoretically the same schedule.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Iowa front loaded their schedule. Yeah. So like they've already seen the benefit of playing all those teams for the most part. So who knows? But as of right now, I mostly said that just to say, like, you know, as much as RPI just really does not matter in this conference, it sounds like it's going to be something. And I'm guessing what he means is just they're going to stack up the RPIs in the Big Ten against each other. So if Maryland finishes 4th but has an RPI somehow 20 spots higher than Iowa, maybe they choose Iowa instead. I don't know. But anyway, that's just something to keep in mind there, that we've been talking so much about how RPI is irrelevant for the Big Ten, but according to the people who matter, it's going to still be a factor. So we'll have to see. But
I personally want to read between the lines on that and just say, like, he feels like he has to say that because that's what the instructions to the committee say. That's me being overly optimistic, though, probably.
I mean, you might be right, though. I mean, it might also be just kind of a signal that could be. I mean, these guys are smart. Like, it could just be a signal to the reading audience, to your point, that, hey, you're still going to hear RPI referenced a lot, and maybe that matters in the Big Ten, maybe it doesn't, but you are going to hear it a lot come Selection Monday. So, I mean, that very well could be the case there, but that's a roundabout way of me saying this weekend's really important for Maryland, because it feels like not just from a title race standpoint, but from an at-large standpoint, it really can't afford to take on much more water, given that Iowa's in a much more advantageous position. Now, Iowa's not immune from stubbing its toe also, so let's not forget that, but as it stands right now on paper, they've just got such a tougher road.
I mean, my guess is that Iowa doesn't even have to get back ahead of Maryland in the standings because they own that head-to-head, that they can't fall further back than they are now. It's a 2-game separation, and it would really behoove them to get tighter. But I don't think they have to totally flip this. I don't think it has to be Iowa finishes 4, Maryland finishes 5 for Iowa to get in because they own that head-to-head stuff. But, you know, you'd feel a lot better if you're the Hawkeyes, if you get ahead. I got one mildly hot take before we move on here. I like Indiana this weekend. Put me down for Indiana winning this pod, it not going out as a split. I just like them being at home. I like the experience factor. You know, this is there are a lot of pieces in play here on the coaching staff on and on the field that were part of the Big Ten champions in 2019. Nebraska on the road, kind of a new spot for a whole lot of people in terms of competing for a conference title. And, you know, I think Indiana's going to have something to prove following last weekend and their series loss at Michigan. All right, Joe, let's run through two more conferences quickly here. Quickly, both because we've been at this a long time and quickly because there's a lot less at stake here. First, I'll just note that the Big West, UC Irvine's magic number is 5. They play this weekend against, they're at Cal State Bakersfield. Santa Barbara, which is in second place, is at Riverside. So UC Irvine could wrap up its first Big West title since 2009 this weekend, would need the slightest bit of help in doing so. But there's a chance that they win the championship and the auto bid that comes with it this weekend. The other thing here is the American. ECU holds a half game edge on Tulane, and they also own the tiebreaker, having beaten Tulane. ECU is at South Florida. Tulane is at Cincinnati. I don't see Tulane or ECU slipping up to let Tulane pass them, but it's possible. It could happen. And ECU is looking for back-to-back titles. Tulane aiming for its first since 2016. Also in play here, you know, Tulane probably is on, like, very likely on track for an at-large. Wichita State is in third place. They're home against Memphis. They need a sweep if their at-large hopes are going to stay alive, I think.
Yeah, both those conferences, I think, you know, right to kind of lump them together and just throw them in there. UC Irvine, I mean, it's interesting just because UC Irvine is a really fascinating team that I'm going to be interested to see in a regional because it's, we've talked about this before, it's not built like you probably think they're built. Just given the history of UC Irvine and the Big West, the stereotypes of the Big West in general. So that I think they're equipped to play pretty well outside of their little bubble in the Big West. So that's fascinating. And in the American, I'm with you. You know, Tulane, that's such a, this is not a Field of 64 podcast we're doing here, but that's just going to be a fascinating one. Obviously, if they are able to catch East Carolina, that's a big feather in their cap, I think, for the committee, because otherwise, you mentioned,
I mean,
soft bubble.
If that happens, like,
I would think
hard
so.
Stop in.
Yeah, it's just kind of a weird little resume where they had like lots of opportunities, and like that is helping their RPI because they played some tougher games, but they didn't really take advantage of those, and they don't have a ton of marquee wins, and there's just a lot of things kind of working against them, and yet here they are. So. It just kind of seems like number 5 RPI conference too. I think this is where conference RPI can matter a little bit. I think sometimes it gets overblown because the committee looks at team resumes, not conference resumes, but I do think on the margins it can matter. And I think this is one of those margins where they look at the number 5 RPI conference and think there probably should be a second team here. And if Tulane gets close enough to being in that, what they're looking for in that large team, I think they can kind of get the nod in part because of that.
All right. There are going to be 3 auto bids handed out this weekend for sure, regardless of what happens in the Big West. Those are the Patriot League, SWAC, and MEAC all finishing their tournaments this week. A couple other conference tournaments start this week in the Metro Atlantic and the A-Sun. Patriot League coming down to a 3-game series between Lehigh and Army. That is at Lehigh. Lehigh looking for its first title since 15. I should have written that down. It's either 15 or 16. Mountain Hawks have best pitcher in the conference in Mason Black, also the conference player of the year. Army has won the last 2 Patriot League tournaments. However, and I said last week on the podcast that they just play really well in this thing under Jim Foster. So we'll see if that can carry them this weekend. In the SWAC, Jackson State is the heavy favorite, having won the conference and gone undefeated in doing so, but you know, you never know in a tournament like this. We'll see what Jackson State has, you know, in terms of challengers, maybe from Alabama State or you know, Southern, Texas Southern, any number of teams, I suppose. And then in the MEAC, probably wide open NC Central comes in, having won the South Division. The South Division's the better division. You know, they're coming off of a sweep at home of Florida A&M. They're probably feeling pretty good about themselves. That would be a wonderful story, as they are going to be eliminated. The program is going to be eliminated whenever this season ends. So this is either the last week in NC Central baseball history, or they're going to make history by getting their first bid ever. So something to watch there in the MEAC tournament. I guess FAMU is the other team to watch. Norfolk State. I don't know. It's kind of wide open there, though.
Yeah, the MEAC is a weird one. And when I was doing those conference stock watches over the summer, you know, the MEAC was a strange one because Norfolk State, like, really quietly has a gaudy conference record. But then you look and the South Division is just so much more competitive in the MEAC than the North Division is, where Norfolk has just kind of run away with that thing year after year, where the South, you know, you've got Bethune-Cookman. You've also got FAMU has been pretty good, and NC Central has had good years, and A&T. So there's just a little more competition there. With these three conference tournaments, if you are a fan of a number one seed, a potential number one seed, some of the teams that Teddy just talked about are teams that are not going to be fun matchups for a number one seed for a number of reasons. If it's Lehigh, like, have fun facing Mason Black in game one. You know, one of the certainly the best pitcher in the Patriot League, one of the best pitchers in that region, going to be a high draft pick, relatively speaking. So that's not going to be a comfortable thing. I wrote about Jackson State a couple of weeks ago, so you might have heard this before, but that team steals a ton of bases and is just going to make you work for it. So that's not a real comfortable matchup. And then in the MEAC, if it's NC Central, they have their own pitcher, not quite as good as Mason Black, but Austin Vernon is their Friday guy. And they have a number two in Ryan Miller, who's probably a pro.
Might be their number one, frankly.
Yeah. So they've really got two guys that can match up. So, you know, watch out if you're a number two seed in that or a three seed in that regional
and,
too.
You know, they're a team that has absolutely nothing to, like, they're going to lay it all on the line. You know?
Yeah. That's a motivated group there. I really like their chances this week in the MEAC for that reason. I mean, they're really playing with their hair on fire. They took it to Florida A&M last weekend, swept four games, made it look fairly routine. So they're playing their best baseball right now too. But so those three tournaments are interesting because there are some potentially tricky matchups for number one seeds coming out of these conferences.
And it should be noted, you know, Jackson State has a decent RPI as conference champions go. Or they, you know, they aren't going to be too terribly low, though they're probably just headed to Starkville if they were to win, just based on geography. Lehigh and NC Central could end up any number of places. There are, you might think NC Central would probably be headed to Greenville or Charlotte, but there are so many four seeds in the Carolinas region that could be sent there that you don't know. And NC Central and Lehigh have two of the worst RPIs of teams that we're probably going to be talking about in the NCAA tournament. So, you know, we're not just talking about, like, low-end hosts here that might get stuck with this. We're potentially talking about top eight hosts that are going to get stuck with a team like Central or Lehigh, and probably not have, like you said, just not be thrilled to see them show up in their regional. But I can't put the cart before the horse here. You know, Army definitely is going to have something to say about this in the Patriot League, and you know, the SWAC and the MEAC tournaments often end up being pretty competitive. So we'll just have to wait and see, and you know, check out who is the first team or first teams to punch their ticket to the NCAA tournament in 2021. All right, Joe, we covered a lot. There's a lot to cover here on this penultimate weekend of the regular season. We'll have it all covered over at baseballamerica.com all weekend. You can check out everything there. You can follow us on Twitter for more analysis and insight. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. And remember to subscribe to the Baseball America podcast to get the pod in your phone twice a week. We'll be back here on Monday to wrap up, again, what is a very busy week around the country. And then we'll have to figure out our postseason recording schedule. But we're going to continue coming at you at least twice a week here down the stretch and into the postseason. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcast app, be that Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Want to thank you all for listening. Thank you to Rapsodo for presenting this edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. As always, for Joe, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that enables your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.